Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 21 of the Proverbs. And what does the Proverbs really mean? The parables. They're all parables. That word proverb means parable. Okay, so we know that this is not a book of poetry as some have tried to promote in the religious realms, but this is a book of wisdom. It is literally a roadmap on how to live your life. If you follow the examples and the patterns that's laid forth in these pages of the book of Proverbs, it'll show you how to live your life. You won't have to have somebody tell you. You can figure it out yourself. And that's the intent of God anyway. That's why the book was written, for us to work it out individually. Okay? I'll start by reading it, chapter 21. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he will. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord ponders the hearts. To do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. A high look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked is sin. The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of every one that is hasty only to want. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity, tossed to and fro of them that seek death. The robbery of the wicked shall destroy them because they refuse to do judgment. The way of a man is froward and strange, but as for the pure, his work is right. It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. The soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. When the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. The righteous man wisely considers the house of the wicked, but God overthrows the wicked for their wickedness. Whosoever stops his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. A gift in secret pacifies anger, and a reward in the bosom strong wrath. It is a joy to the just to do judgment, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. The man that wanders out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. The wicked shall be a ransom for the righteous, and the transgressors for the upright. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spends it up. He that follows after righteousness and mercy finds life, righteousness and honor. A wise man scales the city of the mighty and casts down the strength of the confidence thereof. Whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from trouble. Proud and haughty scorner is his name who deals in proud wrath. The desire of the slothful kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. He covets greedily all the day long, but the righteous give and spares not. The sacrifice of the wicked is abomination. How much more when he brings it with a wicked mind? A false witness shall perish, but the man that hears speaks constantly. A wicked man hardens his face, but as for the upright, he directs his way. There is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord. Now let's go back and shake it out. First verse again. The king's heart, what is that word supposed to be?
Mind.
Mind. Is in the hand of the Lord. Now let's go a little further about this. The king's mind is in the heart of the Lord. In the hand of the Lord. The king's mind is in the hand of the Lord. What are we talking about? He called us to be a nation of kings and priests. That would tell me that the king is not wrestling with God. He's accepting what God wants him to do. Kind of like what Paul said in the New Testament, whatever lot you're in, learn to be content therewith. Whatever God is wanting you to do, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Don't fight it. That's what he wants. Sometimes we don't understand what God requires of us, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be obedient, does it? It doesn't mean we shouldn't try to understand it, but it still means we should be obedient, because that's what he desires more than anything else. If I really wanted to take the time, I could take the time on that first verse today and spend the whole day on it. But I'm not trying to do that. We're trying to get a general pattern of everything so we don't make issues out of something, but get the big picture. Okay, so the king's mind is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he desires. Okay, wherever he desires, that's where it's going to go. So what's that telling you about a king?
He's in control.
God's in control of the kings. The kings are in submission to God. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they do whatever he wants. The King James said it, well, I read it, now I'm going to read it out of the Living Bible. Just as water is turned into irrigation ditches, so the Lord directs the king's thoughts. He turns them whithersoever he wants to. It's not up to the king, it's not up to us, it's up to God, isn't it? Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord ponders the what? The mind. And the word ponder there is not good. Literally, the word ponder should mean he tests or proves or regulates the mind. Now, nobody likes to hear that God regulates our thinking process. Well, why wouldn't he? And everybody's pat answer is, we are free moral agents. You've all heard that, no doubt. It's not true, but they all say it. See, that's that tradition of man in religion, saying we're free moral agents and God will not violate your will. Ha! I can laugh at that one. He's violated mine all kinds of times. You know what? And I'm glad he did, because at the time I wasn't thinking right. But secondly, we're not free. If you are free, that means you have no restrictions. Would that be true? If you're free, you have no restrictions, right? You're not free because there's always somebody telling you what to do in this life. Yeah. And you're not moral because we're human beings. And we're not agents of God either. Not everybody, I guarantee you. There's some he's chosen, some he's not. But for that purpose, that's his purpose. So we have to realize we're not free moral agents. That's some more of that traditional stuff that they start. No proof of it, just what they want to believe. And the natural mind does not want to give up their right, do they? Mm-hmm. Never do.
God is faithful. Do what has to be done to change the way you think.
You'll never change until he does. So God, every way is right in a man's own eyes, but the Lord tests, proves, and regulates the minds of humanity.
See?
Sure, they think they're right whether it is or not. They won't look at anybody else's usually. If they look at somebody else, they might find out, you know, that could be better. And you know, there's a lot of people that has changed my mind over the years that I did things in a way that I thought was absolutely the way it should have been. And you know, I saw people do things that worked that would never have crossed my mind. And I thought, that means everything wasn't exactly the way I saw it.
That's why God gave me to you.
Absolutely. I wasn't talking about what you did. But I saw a lot of people over the years do things contrary to what the pattern is. And there are some patterns in life that are pretty well good patterns to hold on to. But there's things that you can do and there's no restriction. You can do it any way you want to. See? If you think. And most people just don't think. Verse 3. To do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. I'll read that again out of the Living Bible. I'll read verse 2 and 3. We can justify our every deed, but God looks at our motives. Verse 2. Verse 3. God is more pleased when we are just and fair than when we give him gifts. And that's the truth. Everybody's worried about impressing God with what they give him, but all he's requiring, he said, I don't want your sacrifice, I want your obedience. So simple. I want your obedience.
If he wants.
Huh?
I'm always amazed, where does anybody think he wants anything? He needs anything.
Yeah, God doesn't need anything. He can think it and it's there. But I mean, that's the mind of humanity. They're boxed in their thinking process. Someone said, give to God and he'll be pleased with you and then he'll bless you back. So they start giving, and that's how traditions are formed. And they're not thinking, are they?
It's his anyways.
Yeah.
Everything's his anyways.
Yeah.
If God needs money right now, it's the right time. Government will give it to him.
Sure. Absolutely.
Tell him what to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. God's trying to get a stimulus package going for himself, right? Hey, well, it's okay to think. It's good. Verse 4. A high look and a proud what?
Mind.
And the plowing, and literally that plowing of the fallow ground is what it should say, of the wicked is an offense. If you try to plow up the fallow ground of someone who is not trying to serve God, do you realize how offensive that is to them? You come and tell a drunk you're not allowed to drink, or an alcoholic, or a drug addict, or whatever they do, whatever vice or habit they have in the flesh. Tell them they're not allowed to do that. And you know how offensive that is? But that's exactly what the church world is doing to everybody, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You don't do this, and you don't do that, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. All these rules and regulations. God didn't say those things, but they came up with them. How offensive is that when they're trying to break up the fallow ground of the people God hasn't called yet? Mm-hmm. Leave them alone. If God wants them, God will get them. God's not helpless. But I think everybody sees God as not as the powerful, omnipotent God He is, but they see Him as a frail, weak, broken-down old man sitting on a chair hoping somebody will come and hear Him. That's not what it is.
Well, He's not here, so we got to do the work.
We got to do it for Him. Yeah, right. We got to help Him. God don't need our help. He needs our obedience. That's all He needs.
That's not making it very useful to that person when they do that.
No, you're offending them.
Yeah.
And the book clearly states in Proverbs that a brother offended is harder to be won than a city with iron bars. You can't get to them once you offend them. So you go starting to beat somebody up that's on the outside trying to get them come in and be miserable like you. What good's it going to do?
That's totally the opposite of one of the ingredients of the fruit of the Spirit, which is gentleness. Which
meekness,
also,
long-suffering.
If you look into gentleness, it's making it useful to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely not making it useful.
Right.
Making them even harder. So, I mean, it's just, it's carnality.
Sure, it's carnality. Up to the max.
I like that.
Yeah, it's good. The thoughts of the diligent, verse 5, tend only to plentiness, but everyone that is hasty only to want. Let me read you this out of the Living Bible. Steady plodding brings prosperity. Hasty speculation brings poverty. And isn't that what the world is teaching today in the stock market? Everybody do this and try to make a whole bunch of money and you know try to get ahead of everybody who can make the most money. Instead of steadily using your money wisely, they're all trying to get this big nest egg built up so that they can retire and say, I don't have to do anything for the next 30 years, but just spend my money. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the ones who come up with this idea to store it all up wasn't God. It was them thieves up on Wall Street. And guess who ended up with all the money? The thieves on Wall Street, and everybody's still working when they're 75 and 80 years old because they stole their money. I had a man tell me last May that this was coming before anybody ever saw it with all these 401ks losing their money and all this stuff in the stock market. He said, if you got it in there, get it out. Told me that last May. He said, I was in a meeting and the man warned us. He said, it's coming and they're going to lose everything they got. You know what? It happened, didn't it? Maybe they didn't lose everything, but they sure lost enough to hurt them. Because they was trusting in their finances and not in God. But anyway, that was 5, right? Okay. Verse 6. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity dispersed by them that seek death. Or dispersed to them that seek death. Read it again. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity dispersed to them that seek death. If they want that stuff, He gives it to them because it's going to bring the death to them, isn't it? If they got it by the lying and dishonest gain. Verse 7, the robbery or the violence and havoc of the wicked shall destroy them because they refuse to do justice. Because they refuse to do right, the same violence and havoc they use to reap and get ahead is the very thing that's going to come back and destroy them. and it goes around, comes around.
You see it all.
It reaps what you reap, what you sow. I mean, you can say it in a whole bunch of different ways, but it's going to come back. The same thing that you did to get where you wanted to go, if you walk on people to get there, somebody's going to walk on you to get where they're going, and you're going to be trampled under. Mm-hmm. Right? Verse 8. The way of man is perverse and what? Burdened with guilt, not strange. Perverse and burdened with guilt. The way of man is perverse and burdened with guilt. But as for the pure, his work is right. Let me read that to you out of the Living Bible. A man is known by his actions. An evil man lives an evil life. A good man lives a godly life. Very simple.
Simple.
Huh?
Plain and simple.
Sure it is. Verse 9. It's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling or a contentious woman in a shared house. So he said, better to live in the corner of an attic upstairs in the corner by yourself than with a contentious woman in a big house that you share. And I think we can probably all relate to that in this room. Somewhere down the road, can't we?
Well, maybe three of you.
Yeah, huh?
Maybe three of you.
Yeah. We can relate to some of that, okay.
Yeah.
Well, the spiritual is the same thing. Yeah. If my spiritual side, my soulish side, rather, is always argumentative, it's better to be without her, isn't it?
Yeah. If you weren't sure you got it in that verse, it gives it to you again in the next verse.
Yeah. Yep.
And what he's saying is if hell's going back in the corner, get rid of
it. Do what?
Hell's going back in the corner.
Yeah. It'll put you in a. You'd be better off to be put in a corner than stay there with it. Verse 10, the soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. Living Bible says, an evil man loves to harm others. Being a good neighbor is out of his line. He don't even have the capacity to be that. No, I've known many like that. They can't be a friend. I've got one gentleman I know, and he says, I don't have any friends. I says, it's because you're not a friend. And I mean, I have to be honest with him. I mean, I'm not trying to hurt him. I said, I'm just telling you the truth. You don't know how to be a friend. You don't have a friend. Your life is wrapped up in what you want. And he's accused me several times of being controlling. I said, me asking you a question is not controlling. I'm trying to figure you out. You know, believe me, you're complicated. I'm trying to figure you out. It's not controlling you. I'm just asking you why you're doing certain things, to figure out how you think about things so I can understand you. And he doesn't understand. He can never have a lot of friends because he's so self-centered. He lives in his own little world. That's the way it is. I got several like that. I try to help them, but you can't help someone that doesn't want to be helped.
Well, it's really not that complicated. They're just in the me, myself, and I world.
They live in an ego.
And
guess next time, do you want to be your friend?
Huh?
You need to ask it when he says he has no friend. Would you want to be your friend?
I could answer that one.
I
know. He would, and he would probably say no. He knows how he is, but he just does not want to change because he's 60-some years old and he just don't want to change. And older people can change if they want to, but you got to want to. You got to have a desire to change. Verse 11, when the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. That's pretty heavy right there. The wise man learns by listening. The simpleton can learn only by seeing scorners punished. Okay. Some people can learn by hearing. And some can only learn by seeing someone punished for something and realize, whoops, I better not do that one. That's pretty amazing. But there's a lot of people like that. They wouldn't take your word for it. This thing is hot. Don't touch it. It'll burn you. They've got to touch it and be burned before they can realize that they shouldn't touch it. There's a lot of people like that. The righteous man wisely considers the house of the wicked, but God overthrows the wicked for their evil. And the way this is expressed, it's like God, and this is a problem with the way people see God. This, of course, was written under the law. Would you agree to that?
Yeah.
Old Testament, written under the law. And people saw God as this wicked, I mean, they almost saw him as wicked and evil, as a God standing there on a throne, ready to punish you at a moment's notice, in a split of a second, you know, if you make a mistake. That's not true. It is definitely not true. That was their perception of God in that time under the law, under the rules and regulations. But since the law was fulfilled in Christ, there is no more that regulation. Now you reap what you sow. So would God be punishing you, or would you be doing it to yourself? I mean, if I do something stupid, if I want to sit and take drugs all my life and burn my body up, is God punishing me? If I want to go jump out in front of a car and get killed, did God have a car run over me?
Well, I could see that in a sense as a child, if your father was correcting you, and a child's mind lots of times, they see their father as being wicked because they don't want to be...
They don't understand and they don't want to be corrected. But again, it's in a childish mind,
right.
Not a childlike, but a childish mind, that they don't want to be changed or judged or corrected in any way.
The same way, I mean, it can be that way if you're 80 years old.
Absolutely. But that's still not the way it should be.
No.
As an adult, when we grow up, we have to realize that God is not punishing us. We are reaping what we sow.
Well, in a certain sense, it can be a nurturing also, because, you know, if you go out there and walk across the yard, and like you said it to me before, and there's a hole out there, and you run out there and grab that person by the arm and keep them from falling in the arm, in the hole, some people may perceive that as being wicked, jerk them. It's really a nurturing to get that child.
Well, you're trying to protect them until they get out of their ignorance, kind of like God protecting us till we come out of our ignorance.
Exactly.
And just like, don't touch that table.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm seeing. This is the same thing. People see that as a wicked thing. But
it's their perception.
Right, and that's that perception.
Misperception, we should say. It's a misperception, a misjudgment on their part of seeing something. You know, no one listens to someone, says a leader that says, I don't know what we should do today. Does anybody have any ideas what we should be? Well, if you're the leader, what are you supposed to do?
Lead.
Supposed to lead. You know, you can't be a wishy-washy, you know, you got to be able to make decisions. If we're called to be kings and priests should know how to do what?
Make decisions.
Even if you make wrong decisions, you can learn from that decision and correct it and go on with life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that, but we got to learn to make those decisions. So some people just don't like to have decisions made. You know, they like to ponder them or procrastinate them for a while, you know.
You got to be able to think on your feet.
Absolutely. You got to think on your feet, do it quickly, and go on with it. You got a lot of life to live. Don't spend it on that one situation. There's all kinds of situations we're going to see in life. If a situation hits you in the face, deal with it and move on. Don't let that one situation overpower you. And what you're doing when you put too much emphasis on a situation that hits you in the face is you're empowering that situation to control your life. Do you hear what I'm saying?
No.
Don't let any situation control you. I know people that's had bad things happen in their life, and 10 years later they're still living under that one situation. It's still got their mind so focused on that one situation, how badly they were treated, or they didn't deserve this, and all these pity party stuff. Man, that's not the way to deal with the situation. Deal with it. Hit it head on and go on, because there's enough evil in the next day to take care of it, ain't there?
They're stuck there.
Yeah, they're stuck. But, I mean, they got to make a decision to come out of that place.
Yeah.
They've got to come out of it. You can't let that thing just take over. There was an article this morning on MSN page on the web, and I read it about, everybody remembers the Columbine thing that happened out in Colorado, the 13 kids got killed or whatever, 13 people. Well, these two preachers in this town had both been, and one's 65 and one's 70 now, and both of them have left the ministry because of this. Now, they left the ministry because of the tragedy of someone being killed. Excuse me, how could you say you're a man of God and you can't deal with the tragedy that happened to somebody else? It wasn't even their family. One man was really kind of ostracized because he befriended the family, the mother and father, of the man, the kid who did most of the killing, that Klebold or whatever his name was. And they didn't do anything wrong. Sure they did, but he was being hounded because of it, and rather than being a strong, decisive man, he's feeling sorry for himself and run off into the mountains with his Harley Davidson and rides his Harley Davidson for relief. But these people are, and they're both on the MSN page today. You can read it. I mean, they're just pity, woe is me. I mean, I'm going, I didn't realize. And one guy said, if you're going to ministry, you better be figuring on a whole lot of pain and suffering. Well, didn't Jesus say, if you don't suffer with me, you'll not reign with me? Come on, there's going to be some hard times. You're never prepared to do battle by playing ping pong on a table all day long in an air-conditioned room, are you? You're going to condition someone to be in battle. You're going to be out there in a mix with all that stuff going on. And I can't believe these men, 65 and 70 years old, can't deal with the situations of life.
Thank God for Harley Davidson.
Oh, yeah, thank God they got a Harley Davidson so they can ride and deal with it, you know. Like,
escape.
It's, and that's what it is. They're escaping from reality. I mean, I like to be out by myself once in a while on a boat fishing. So, but I don't run and hide when things hit me. I deal with them. That's just something I like to do, you know.
It's the opposite of what Jesus said.
Yeah.
That they're not escaped, but yeah. That they overcome.
Yeah. He said, don't remove them from the world, but protect them in the world, John 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, they missed the whole point. Okay. That was verse 12, wasn't it? Okay, verse 13. Whosoever stops his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. You know, better think about it when you start shutting everybody off, because you might be the next one shut off. And God's not going to do it again. See, they're making it like God setting up a saying, oh, you didn't give to that poor person, so you're cut off right now. That's just a law of God put in nature and in physics of the world. And guess what? It's going to happen. Because God said so. End of discussion. It's going to happen. But if you have the heart of God to give anyway, what's the problem? Anybody got a problem with that? I mean, there's no problem with that, is there? The Living Bible says it this way. He who shuts his ears to the cries of the poor will be ignored in his own time of need. That's all. Very bluntly. Tells you how it is. Verse 14, a gift in secret pacifies anger, and a bribe, should say bribe, not reward, in the bosom strong wrath. And the King James doesn't really do it justice. The Living Bible has the better intent in it. It says, an angry man is silenced by giving him a gift or a bribe. Makes sense, don't it? Someone's angry, you hand them a nice gift, what do they think? They take your mind off of that issue, onto the present. Yep. Yep.
Pacify them.
Give them something else. Get your mind off of it. 15. It is a pleasure, not a joy, it's a pleasure to the just to do judgment, but terror to the workers of iniquity. See, it's a pleasure to do to the just to do the judgment and justice. To do the right thing is a joy to the people that are right in their thinking. But it's also terror to the workers of iniquity. People who don't have the mind of Christ in them yet, activated, it's a terror to them. I mean, you tell a person that you're supposed to give of your finances and of your wealth to someone you don't even know, to someone who don't have a clue about what God is all about, what do you think they think about it? Huh. When donkeys fly, you might get a nickel off of me, you know. They ain't giving nothing up. They ain't going to do anything whenever I earned it, it's mine. Right? Try to tell those people that. They don't hear you. And it's a terror to them to lose what they're in control of. Verse 16. The man that wanders out of the way of understanding shall not remain, but shall be in the congregation of the dead. It's like this. I could draw a line down the middle of this room, and if the way on this right side is understanding and the left side is out of the way of understanding, the congregation of the dead on one side, the congregation of the living on the other, if you stepped out of the congregation of the living across that line, where would you be?
In the carnal realm.
Yeah. And see, now look what it says. And this, the key words here, it's really intensifies the meaning of it. The man that wanders out of the way. That means he was in the way. And once you've been in the way and wander out of the way of understanding, shall be in the congregation of the dead. See? You've been there and you walked out of it. See? How many are classified in that realm? A whole bunch. Just a whole bunch. He that loves pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loves wine and oil, or literally wine and wealth, shall not be rich. So he say, if you like the pleasures, you're not going to make it. Yep. Living Bible says, a man who loves pleasure becomes poor. Wine and luxury are not the way to riches. You go out partying all the time, how much money are you going to have left?
Not much,
if any. Okay, verse 18. The wicked shall be a ransom for the righteous, and the transgressors for the upright. What do you think that really says? The wickedness shall be a ransom. And that word ransom is the word kafar. The root word of it is kafar. Does anybody know what that word means? Kafar is a word for atonement. Okay? It's the same word used, and the word kafar is used when they took the ark and built the ark, and they covered the outside with pitch. It's the same word. They kafarred the thing. They didn't pitch it, they kafarred it. Okay, and kafar means it was an atonement or a covering for it. So what he's trying to say here, that the wickedness shall be the atonement or the redemption price for the righteous. We're not talking about two classes of people here. We got to get our mind in the understanding of God. The wickedness in me is the price that has to be paid to come to righteousness. It's got to be a death to that carnal side of me. That's the price of redemption. Okay? It's a giving up of my own carnal way of thinking. It's so much simpler when you understand it, how much easier it is. God's not going to try to kill 90% of the population on this earth. He's trying to redeem. He's not trying. He is redeeming. He's redeeming them. It's a corrective punishment he's given them. It's a corrective measure. It's not just a punish to destroy, but it's a reconciling, a putting them back together, bringing us back together, bringing us back to our Father, not destroying us.
Well, that right there is the whole thing, the crucifixion.
Sure it is.
The whole thing is crucified with the
flesh. Not spirit. It can't be. But anyway, the wickedness is the redemption price or atonement for the righteous, and the transgressions for the upright. Not the transgressor, but the transgressions for the upright. So that what's transgressing in me has got to die for the righteousness to live. That brings forth life. Just like Jesus went to the cross, his flesh died that his spirit live. And he died that we not might have life, but he died that we possess the life. And we do, but he wants us to consciously possess it so we can actively live it. If I'm not aware of what's there, would I ever actively live it? I couldn't do it. Okay, here we are back in 19. That goes back with verse 9. It's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. He says, it's better to live out in the desert by yourself than to live with a contentious and angry woman. And again, we're not talking about a physical woman as we could relate to in life, but it's our soul, our female side, the one that's contentious. And that's no knock on females. It's about a spiritual thing. It's about the soul. Verse 20. There is treasure to be desired and oil. The word oil should be riches. There is treasure to be desired and riches in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it. Now, look again. This is internal, not external. In the house of the wise, there's treasure and riches to be desired. It's in the house of the wise. We're not talking about the building we're sitting in. We're talking about your body, your spirit within you. There's the treasure and the wealth that's to be desired. But a foolish man squanders it. See, you've been given a life, like we've talked for a long time now, about the journey from the beginning to the destination. It's all about this journey. And some people go through their whole life and squander that journey, never gaining anything from God in this journey.
It's like the five foolish virgins.
The five foolish virgins or the five wise virgins? They went through life and they didn't get the oil they needed to get the light they needed for warmth and heat and whatever, the different, you know, light and everything. So they passed it all over because they just weren't paying attention to God. Okay? They were all inflamed with self. You know, that's all they were concerned about, what they could get out of life for themselves. Verse 21, he that follows after righteousness and mercy finds life, righteousness and honor. So if you follow after righteousness and mercy, it says, he that follows righteousness and mercy, who was righteousness? Christ. And mercy. So you find life. If you follow him, you find life, righteousness and honor. If you follow him. It's not about following a religion. It's not about following an organization, a group of people, or a person of anybody. It's the following of the Christ within yourself. Verse 22, a wise man scales the city of the mighty and casts down the strength and what? It says the confidence thereof, and those words are not right. It should say it this way, a wise man scales the city of the mighty and casts down the strength of their security. When you take down the strength of their security, there's no more opposition, is there?
It's your ego.
You take the ego down, now God can deal with you. See, you can't deal with the Christ in you until your ego's down.
It's going to come down one way or the other.
Sooner or later. You pay me now or pay me later. The old Fram commercial, same thing. Verse 23, whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from trouble. In other words, if you can tell that woman to shut up inside of you, the one inside, like Mark said, slap her in the mouth and tell her to shut up. Okay. But you can keep it from trouble. You can keep from suffering trouble if you just watch what you say. Wouldn't that be the advice?
Yeah.
Watch what you say.
Guard your words.
Are we not snared by the words of our mouth? The Living Bible says, keep your mouth closed and you'll stay out of trouble.
There
you go. Because I was trying to think of how it's real simple. Yeah. When I first started studying Scripture years ago, I used to think that the Living Bible was really not very good translation. And sometimes it's really way off base. But sometimes it just puts it right down to the bottom line.
When you first started studying it, you thought it was demon-possessed.
Well, because I didn't understand. See, I was still under religion. So I didn't understand what was going on. But I do now. A lot better. Verse 24. Proud and arrogant mocker is the name, proud and arrogant mocker is his nature and character. See, his character or reputation. I'll say it again. Proud and arrogant mocker is his character or reputation who deals in arrogant outbursts of passion. People who deal with the arrogant outbursts of passion, they're arrogant and mockers. That's their nature and character.
They're just a prideful man.
It's just the natural man, raw and untamed. Verse 25, the desire of the slothful kills him. Now the word slothful here literally is nothing more than lazy. Because a lazy man doesn't do anything. He doesn't prepare anything, does he?
No.
He doesn't prepare anything for winter to get through. He doesn't prepare anything for tomorrow. He just lives in the day and hopes that the system will give him what he needs. See? Because his hands refuse to labor, this is what it says, the desire of the lazy kills him because his hands refuse to labor. I'm going to go ahead and do 26. He covets greedily all the day long, but the righteous gives and does not hold back. That's what it should say. The righteous give and do not hold back. Now I'll read that in the Living Bible. 25 and 26 go together. It said, the lazy man longs for many things, but his hands refuse to work. He is greedy to get while the godly love to give. Very plain. Verse Verse 27, the sacrifice of the wicked is disgusting to God. How much more when he brings it with a wicked mind? God tries the thoughts and intent of the mind, right? So if you bring something to God as a sacrifice and your mind's not where it should be, does God know it? Of course. So if your heart, if your mind's not on this thing in the right way, there's no point in giving, is there? No point in doing anything right if your heart's not. If you're doing it just because you think you should, because God will like you better if you do, if it's not your nature and character to do those things, it'd be like a dog telling a dog not to bark anymore. Yeah, sure, until some stranger walks up or something. Immediately they go off. Verse 28, a false witness shall perish, but a man that hears, Shammah, hears intelligently with the intent to respond positively, speaks what? Not constantly, but literally he speaks not constantly, but confidently and truthfully. He speaks confidently and truthfully. But the man that hears intelligently with the intent to respond speaks confidently and truthfully. So if we hear what God says to us, we just tell them the truth. And let them deal with the situation then. A wicked man hardens his face, and you know that's talking about his mind, right? If you make your face hard, it'd be kind of hard to smile or to eat or do anything, wouldn't it?
A lot of people do that too.
But they look hard, but I'm talking about you make your face hard, that's not what it is, it's your mind. You get offended in your mind. But as far as the upright or the just, he directs his way. And it should say, he considers or understands his course of life. Okay? Say it again. But as for the just, he considers or understands his course of life. So many people don't understand what their life is about. Why are they here? It's not about you. Everybody's not supposed to be earth-shattering, changing the whole system of the world. That's not what we're here for. Verse 30. There is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. It's not saying that there aren't people contradicting God. What it's saying is there's nothing that can contradict God that makes him anything important. Because there's always going to be people that contradict God, but they're not going to be able to change anything that God has set up. If they could, then they'd be God. Verse 31. I'm going to read out of the Living Bible first. It says, go ahead and prepare for the conflict, but victory comes from God. But I'm going to take you back to the King James now and tell you something a little bit more about it. It said, the horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord. The horse is what? It's a beast. It's the beast nature. So the beast is prepared for the day of battle. God made the horse strong, didn't he? And God's saying, he made this beast man to be that we live inside of. See, the beast man is the outside man. He made this man strong to take the battle of the journey. Okay? But deliverance, not safety, but deliverance is from the Lord. No matter how strong this horse is, no matter how strong this outer man is, the only way I'm going to get delivered from this outer man, whether it's in here or out there or wherever it is going to be God doing it.
From the inside.
It's going to come from the inside where God dwells. Absolutely. And see, this is the kind of wisdom that we need to overcome this world. We don't need to say, I'm better than you are. I'm meaner than you are. I got more than you got. That's not going to overcome anything. But to know that this beast nature can only be overcome by God, the creator of it. End of discussion. See? There's no sense arguing that. Didn't it say in the verse before that? There's no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel that can undermine what God wants, is there? I think it's pretty simple. I think it's very enlightening to know. Do you know how many people would like to know what we know today? And there's people that honestly are going into these churches, these man-made systems that man has come up with, that are trying to find God, they're trying to find solutions, and all they're finding is condemnation and guilt. And they would really like to hear the truth. But see, I'm not called to go out and scream on the street corners or to get on the radio waves or on the TV or any of that stuff. I'm just doing what I'm doing. That's all I'm supposed to do.
And they seem to find me too, you don't think?
They'll find me if they need to. I don't have to do anything. And what made me do what I'm doing is, well, I saw the patterns of the Old Testament. The prophet did not travel to the people. Only when God sent him, on very few occasions. The prophet lived in his life, did what he was supposed to do, and most people didn't know he existed until God wanted to use him. And if they did know he was, the prophet, they didn't say, hey, somebody go get me a prophet. It was, they would go find the prophet. If you wanted the man of God, you go find him. He would sit down and they would come to him. He didn't go. They didn't go chase the prophet down, did they? And today the church has figured into the marketing scheme into the church world. Say, well, if we have a meeting, I can make this much money. If I have a whole bunch of meetings, I can have a whole bunch more money. So they start working up gigs. They start selling books and tapes and CDs and all that stuff. And next thing you know, they're big time. Making millions and millions of dollars.